Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Walker v. Harris.
May it please the court, Ms. Kenneth Seiler will present argument for petitioners.
May it please the court, my name is Kenneth Seiler and I'm here with John Cosby representing William and Deborah Walker in connection with the premises liability lawsuit. This lawsuit arose out of the stabbing death of Mr. Ronald Harris. It occurred at a fourplex in Berkshire, Texas, owned by the Walker. The Court of Appeals reversed the summary judgment granted by the trial court, holding that there was a question of material fact as to the adequacy of the security provided by the Walkers at this fourplex. It's our position that we do not even need to reach the question as to the adequacy of the security because under the facts of this case, there is absolutely no duty that was owed by the Walkers to a guest of their tenant who was high both on alcohol and cocaine at the time of this incident. And for that reason, summary judgment granted by the trial court was proper.
Just so that it's clear in my mind, the guest was an invited guest?
I believe that the record reflects that he was not an invited guest of the tenant.
Okay, so he was an uninvited guest,
and he
was stabbed
by another partygoer.
Oh, is that correct?
Yes.
You've said based on the facts of this case, and I'm having a hard time pinning down the premises.
Okay.
I mean, they've been described by one as being an apartment complex, they've been described as another as a duplex, and then the third is described as actually a four-family unit, and another one's described as a compound, another one, and why is it, I mean, I guess I'm not interested in why it's not clear. Keeping to the record, what is the undisputed facts about what this is?
This is the Walkers own a fourplex, basically one building with four units. That is contained within an area with several other similar fourplexes.
Now, when you say an area, what do you mean by an area?
The record reflects that it is just in a residential area with several other of these buildings.
Do they own any common areas? Various buildings?
The record does not reflect as to who owns the common areas. The record reflects just that the Walkers own this one fourplex within this other area.
Do they own the other fourplexes?
No, they do not.
So they only own one fourplex?
They own one building. That's correct.
And there's nothing in the record that describes what is meant by common areas or anything like that?
I don't believe there's anything in the record that indicates who owns the common areas.
Are there common areas?
There are common areas in between the other buildings in this area.
Are they? Is there a homeowners association? Are there bylaws for the maintenance and upkeep of the common areas?
There's nothing in the record to reflect that. It's our position that, as this court knows, negligence is composed of four elements. You've got duty, breach of that duty, proximate cause, and damages. In this case, there is no duty because the question of duty is based on several interrelated factors, the dominant factor being foreseeability. In this case, under the undisputed facts of this case, the event that caused Mr. Harris's death was absolutely not foreseeable. The record reflects that there were no calls for any type of violent crimes to this area. The record reflects that this fourplex in this area of other fourplexes is not a sprawling apartment complex in Houston or in Austin or in any big city with big city expectations of crime.
Well, from the record, how do we know that? How do we know it's not a sprawling complex?
We know that it happened in Brookshire, and we know from the record that that the Walkers owned one unit within just several other units. It's not
several
other fourplex units.
How many is that?
I believe that there's some indication that there are eight other buildings in this area.
Not sprawling.
Well, it's not your typical apartment complex in your big city with your big city expectations of crime. the police chief indicated that the fourplex is in, right on the end of a residential area. He described the crime in that area of Brookshire as moderate and then light to moderate. There were, like I said, no other violent crimes in that area. And I would agree that there doesn't have to be another murder there to make the fact that there was a murder here foreseeable. But there needs to be something to give the walker some reason to believe that this type of crime would be foreseeable. And there's nothing to give the walkers that that knowledge, or nothing to indicate that they should have known that.
Do you concede that as an owner of this property, had the walkers understood that the neighborhood in which they owned this property was a high crime area, you concede they would have had a duty to provide security for that?
Had the walkers known that this was a high crime area? Yes. But this is a different situation than a situation where you have a landlord and a tenant. In that situation, the landlord has a higher degree of care that it owes to its tenant, because in that situation, it's an invitee. In this case, we have, at best, Mr. Harris was a licensee. As you know, the social guests are treated as licensees. That's assuming that he's even invited to this party. I believe the record reflects that he was not an invited guest to this party, so he's actually treated as a trespasser, which is even lower. Given the status of the plaintiff in this case, the duty owed by the walkers to him is much lower than had he been a tenant, or had he had some other special relationship that would give rise to a higher duty that the walkers owed to him. But in this case, because anything even remotely close to what happened was not foreseeable, there's no duty. There are other factors also that go into the question of whether there is a duty. One of them is whether the magnitude of putting this type of burden on the defendant. The respondent's expert has said that they should have had some kind of armed security guard or some kind of physical presence on the property. Well, that's just simply not realistic. For an owner of a fourplex to have a security guard or a 24-hour guard on the premises.
And yet you say if there had been more crime in the area, that might be necessary.
If there had been more crime in the area, certainly that might be necessary.
Even though it's not practical to do it?
Well, you probably wouldn't want to buy a fourplex and rent it if it were in a high crime area, if you had to provide that security.
Or at least not have anybody come there.
Exactly. You have a situation where if you take it a step further, if you're renting a house, do you then have to hire a guard to protect against problems that guests may have in that situation? Basically, it's our position that because there's no duty to provide security or no duty to rent.
What is the summary judgment evidence on control of the premises?
That issue was not addressed in the summary judgment.
Where was the crime in relation to the building? Was it in the front yard, or?
It was outside the building.
Outside what front?
Outside the building.
But it's an area that's owned by the...
That's not part of the record.
It was just someone that had been inside the building and...
It was outside the building.
No, but initially had been inside the building.
What was the party? The party inside or outside? That's what we're talking about.
We'll take a 5-minute break.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
We should take a break and then see if we're okay.
There she goes.
Thank you. Thank you. Be seated.
I apologize. What happened was completely unforeseeable. Mr. Harris is telling me.
If it had been foreseen, that would have been worse.
Essentially, our argument is just that based on the fact that there's no duty, there's therefore no duty to warn, no duty to provide security, and therefore the summary judgment granted by the trial court was proper.
Where would you draw the line, though? You make the point that this is not a large complex. Where would you draw the line as a legal matter?
Well, I think that certainly a landlord owes a tenant a duty to protect them against crime, certainly loss, lights, in perhaps in a high crime neighborhood, security guard. The line is drawn somewhere outside of that for guests of tenants or licensees or trespassers. I think that certainly if you have specific knowledge that crime is a problem, you may need to take some step to alleviate that problem, just like any duty that a landowner owns a licensee or a trespasser.
Again, the crime itself, in the record, there is no evidence that it was on the premises owned by the defendant.
It was outside of the fourplex. I think the evidence shows that there was a stairway leading down from the specific apartment where this tenant who was having the party lived, and it happened from on the stairs and then sort of on the landing right now.
Okay, on the stairs of the fourplex.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Or right on the landing of the stairs.
Any other questions? Thank you, Carol.
Good morning, Justices. I'm Lawrence Rothenberg. I'm pleased to be here on behalf of the Harris family. I'd like to clear up a few fact points. I think that Justice Owen hit this case right on the head with her question. How do you draw the line? It's a fact question. And that's why summary judgment was inappropriate in this case. I don't think there's a dispute, if you look at the record, that the stabbing occurred.
Before we get to the five questions, we have the court first has to ask the question, is there a duty, and that's a matter of law. And help us to articulate, how would you articulate
Let me address
the factors as to why there's a duty in the first place?
All right, Your Honor, I do agree that initially duty is a question of law. However, if crime is foreseeable in an area, then duty arises. That is the Hawk case and the Nixon case that this court has written many years ago. And
well,
it basically,
Nixon had a per se statute involved in it.
Yes, Nixon did involve a statute. But that
we don't have that in this case, is that correct?
No, there's no statute, Your Honor, but that same philosophy, that same theory was adopted in Hawk versus Savoy, and then also in another Supreme Court case, Delaney versus U of H, which adopted Nixon. Basically, it says that regardless of your status isn't important. Once the criminal act is foreseeable, then a duty arises. Whether or not a criminal act is foreseeable is a fact question. So it's sort of like a
geometry. You want to turn duty into a fact question.
It is a fact question, with all due respect, Your Honor. I don't think that
despite
duty...
Despite centuries of saying it's a legal question.
Well, what they say, Your Honor, is that duty is a question of law, but to determine duty. Duty is not just a one global concept that applies to every cause of action. It's like saying, I want to sue you for a tort. Well, there are many torts, many different theories. Duty is a question for the law, the court to determine, but in that determination, if the court determines that there is criminal acts that are foreseeable, then the duty arises.
Let me ask you about foreseeability. Other than expert testimony, what evidence is there that this particular act was foreseeable?
Your Honor, that's a good question. And I would point to the court two legal principles first before I answer you, and that is the particular act doesn't need to be foreseen. In other words, you don't have to show that a prior murder, like in Midkiff, the court said, you don't even have to show a prior murder occurred, just some prior criminal conduct. in the Eastep versus Jack in the Box case, it was a spontaneous fight that occurred. So the question is not, would this egregious conduct been have and could have been anticipated? Could a murder have been anticipated? That's not the question. The question is, was there facts in this record that a reasonable person could know or look at and say, there's crime here, the duty has arisen? And I say the answer is yes.
There's no difference in duty between Harold Favre, manager, and the little old lady who rents out a room in the back.
Yes, there is, Your Honor, and that's a fact question.
That's a fact question.
I think the facts, the duty that you're going to impose upon somebody is based upon the facts. Now, again,
you say the fact issue of duty comes in foreseeability. What's the foreseeability element given the difference between, that arises in terms of the difference between the landlord?
Okay. Your Honor, in this particular case, there were reports of four crimes.
Well, I'm not making myself clear. I just said 1,000-unit apartment versus one room in the back. Is there a difference in duty?
Yes.
You said yes.
Yes, there is, Your
Honor. I ask how, and you start talking about the number of crimes in the area. The same type of crimes in each area?
You have to go through the Berry analysis, where Berry says duty is a complex issue that involves several questions. The likelihood of the crime, the magnitude of the preventing against the crime, foreseeability. Berry lists these issues. You have to do like an analysis, sort of maybe as an evidentiary analysis in 403, where you're going to balance
whether or not the
jury, the fact finder, is going to have to balance, is going to have to decide what facts make the duty arise. If foreseeability is a fact question and foreseeability is a component of duty, then duty must have a factual element.
But there are other components of duty, and one of them is the magnitude of the protection.
Yes.
And that's also for the jury.
Yes, Your Honor. I think
one question, separate questions?
I think you could submit it globally, but I think that the jury considers all these factors and says whether the duty arose under these facts.
What's the specific question you asked the jury on duty?
Well, there was no jury. This is a summary judgment.
I know that. I'm asking you. You're saying let the jury decide. What's the fact question that you asked the jury about to decide duty? What are you
saying? You asked the jury whether the person was negligent. And then in the definition of negligent, you tell them that you're not negligent unless a duty arises, and a duty arises if so-and-so. And you list these things, these elements that we've talked about that the court discussed and buried.
Which are what?
Well, as the magnitude of the crime, the cost to the owner of preventing the crime, the predictability of the crime. There are several factors that the Berry Court lists, but the first and foremost is the foreseeability of the risk. Likelihood of injury, weight against the social utility of the conduct, magnitude of the burden. There are several factors that Berry goes through in analyzing whether there's going to be a duty. It's a sophistry to say that duty is merely a legal concept, because while that is true as a global statement, in order to get to that analysis, you've got to analyze foreseeability. And foreseeability is a factual analysis.
Mr. Rosenberg, I realize you pled this case as a negligence case, but in fact, is this not a premises liability case?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that through my when I researched the case, I felt the best causes of action based upon what happened in this case were negligence and failure to warn. However, there was no special exception to my pleadings. They probably could have made me do what you suggested.
But if the attachment of the duty is as a result of Walker being a landlord, isn't your route to getting to liability under the premises liability laws in this state?
And I think you're correct, but I believe the premises liability laws are based upon negligence. And
if in our opinion in Exxon versus Tidwell, and also in our opinion Brownsville versus Izagari, Mr. Gonzalez could help me with that, but that we begin with the premise that the landlord has no duty to the tenant for the conditions either natural or artificial on the premises, aren't we talking in terms of if there is going to be a duty, it has to be an exception to the general rule that there is no duty, and as an example, generally a landlord has no duty to prevent criminal acts of a third party unless the criminal is under their supervision or control, or unless landlord retains some sort of right control over the premises. Don't we start out with certain general rules that govern whether or not there exists a duty?
We start off with that general rule, as you've said, Your Honor, but you omitted part of that rule. And part of that rule is unless it's foreseeable. And we've had many cases that say that. And I was asked the question, why was this foreseeable? And my answer is that there were four criminal offenses that occurred in this tiny little project that the petitioner says is a small project. Four criminal offenses in the 6 months prior, a theft, criminal mischief, which could have been misdemeanor or felony, if it's unclear. But there were four crimes in this.
But isn't this duty really dependent on whether the defect is latent or obvious? I mean, the duty of the landlord to warn or make safe really depends on whether or not it's something the tenant knows about or doesn't know about, not on foreseeability.
I believe, Your Honor, that in the summary judgment evidence that we presented, the landlord has a, and in the case law that's in our brief, the landlord does have a duty to once in a while inspect the police records to see what the area is like. We have evidence from the police chief that this was a moderate area of crime. We had evidence of four crimes that occurred in this area. Now, I think at some point the landlord can't just stick his head in the ground. He's got to say, I own a business, and part of my business is inviting people onto the property, renting out property. I want to check the area out to make sure I have some security. In this case,
so it's really a jury question. If we have a fourplex, and you want to have a 24-hour security guard, whatever that costs, $50,000 a year, that's really a jury question of a balance of whether that's something the law should impose upon a landlord, which is, I assume the landlord's going to pass that through the rent or attempt to.
Well, Your Honor,
that's the best balance for society or not. That's really nothing the court ought to concern itself with or the legislature.
Well, I think I see where you're driving at, Your Honor, but let me say that in this particular case, there was some dispute over the facts, and I can read you what was in the record. The location of the incident in question is an apartment building located within a complex of similar buildings at the intersection of Kenny and Fourth in Brookshire, Texas. It then goes on to say that the apartment building, although separately owned, physically appears to be part of a complex of other buildings. The building appears to share common areas such as grounds and parking to other buildings in the premises.
That's in the police report?
No, that's in the affidavit of Mr. Swanson, who went out and examined and described the property unobjected to at the summary judgment hearing. So we have a piece of property that's not just four little pieces of property sitting by themselves. It's a large area.
I just have a larger question than whether this is 40 or 36. It is, that balance is one that in our system the jury makes.
Yes.
On an ad hoc case.
Yes, Judge, but not to the extreme you put it. I don't think that the jury's going to say, well, a security guard is here. I think there was no security, Your Honor. The record shows in a deposition testimony that I attached to my motion for summary judgment from the owner of the property, Mr. Walker, there was no security. There was no fence. There was no special lighting. There was no security guard, which maybe a jury would find or a court could find to be too much. But something, some effort to check the record, some effort to establish some type of security.
I think the opposing brief said that the some of the police reports describe calls to the apartment for domestic violence. Now, what would be the landlord's responsibility to a tenant who is injured by staff? Are you saying they have some responsibility there?
No, ma'am. There was not one domestic violence call. I had the exhibit right in front of me, and that was attached to the summary judgment. Criminal trespass, theft, criminal mischief, missing child, theft. Then there's some other things like loud music, accident, but there's nothing in it that specifically talks about domestic violence. I think that if the apartment manager is notified that someone's cat is missing, that doesn't arise a duty. But I think that there's...
Well, I guess my question is, this was an uninvited guest.
Well, I disagree with that. This person, the evidence is that this person was attending a party. That's all the evidence. It does not say he was a party crasher or uninvited.
He was not a tenant.
He was not a tenant.
Okay.
But the cases that I've cited in my brief, Your Honor, they do say that a landlord does owe some duty to get to the tenant because you can reasonably anticipate a tenant being on the property. And I cite the court to the Perenboom case versus HSP, which is cited at 910 Southwest 2nd 156, which discusses that very issue, Your Honor.
Okay. If a jury finds
Yes, Your Honor.
No, listen to me. If a jury finds that this was foreseeable, is there any reason why there shouldn't be a duty in the case? Can a court then decide there shouldn't be a duty?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
So the foreseeability is really the test.
I believe it is, Your Honor. Under the cases, under Nixon and all the progeny of cases that have come out of the appellate court, once there's a duty, then the question is, did you discharge that duty? The jury may well find that there was no duty, or the jury may well find that they discharged their duty, that what they did was enough.
How about the other prong of duty, besides foreseeability? You're completely writing out cause and fact?
Well, I don't, Your Honor, with all due respect, I think cause and fact is a prong of proximate cause, not a duty. Duty is strictly a question of foreseeability, and proximate cause contains the elements of foreseeability and cause and fact. But again, you're getting into fact issues there.
Well, so duty exists because there were four prior incidents. What if there were three, or two, or one?
You're getting into the province of the jury, Your Honor.
Okay, so what you're saying then is once, if we were to give this to a jury, once a jury decides foreseeability, the appellate courts can't review it. We always have to give 100% deference to a jury.
I think it's like if you have two witnesses to a car accident and the trial court believes one or the other. I mean, at some point, we have to give deference to the fact finders if there's any evidence to support the record.
Let's assume there were no prior incidents out there, but a jury found that there was a duty. We would just go ahead and have to say,
no, Your Honor.
Foreseeable.
There would be no evidence point, and I think it would be reversed with no evidence or insufficient evidence. Under Garza and those cases that have come out on insufficient points. But I believe that...
Is there any element of negligence other than duty? I mean, other than foreseeability, any element to the duty?
Well, I think, yes. I think you have to, in order to be negligent, you have to have breached that duty. In other words, there has to be a duty. Once you have a duty, the next question is, did you breach the duty? And that's the question.
What's the duty in this case?
The duty to provide some security to the premises to deter. In the affidavit of our expert witness,
all owners of property have a duty to the world to deter crime on that property. I mean, what duty are we talking about here?
I believe, Your Honor, that the affidavit of my expert, which this part was uncontroverted, said that apartments like these are targets for criminals. And that because
well,
there's
no
fence.
I'm trying to get to the duty. Not the fact of this case.
I think there's
what's
a duty.
The duty here? What duty to whom?
All right. I think that the landlord in this case owed a duty to its tenants and their guests to warn them of any...
And the uninvited guests?
Well, this, Your Honor, this was not an uninvited... I dispute that fact. Even if he's a trespasser, you can't willfully and wantonly injure a trespasser.
I agree with that. I'm just trying to see where does this duty go?
Well, I think the duty goes to the tenant. In this particular case, the evidence is that this person was attending a party there.
But beyond the tenant, does it just extend to the tenant?
And again, that's what Pennenbrook case that I cited earlier talked about. And several of these premises liability cases I cite in my brief talk about that. Your Honor,
the landlord has a concomitant right, I suppose, to write into a lease, no parties without prior permission of the landlord.
I believe the landlord could do that if he wanted to. But in this particular case, Judge, I think the issue is that the landlord here did nothing. Now, it may be a jury would find that nothing was necessary under these facts after a factual review of all the evidence. But my client hasn't even gotten a day in court. My client should be allowed to have a jury decide whether or not this was foreseeable. Have a jury decide whether or not the duty was discharged or whether they were negligent or not. Have a jury decide whether or not under proximate cause analysis that this was foreseeable. Foreseeability is part of both duty and proximate cause.
Is there any difference between the two?
I don't think there's any difference in the law as it applies to what the definition is, but we have, since Professor Keaton and Professor Prosser have had their disagreements, Texas law has put that into both duty and proximate cause.
Counsel, assuming there's a duty, however amorphous that duty is in the fine, how do you get over the hump of no causation as a matter of law?
Well, I don't think that's true, because in order to, like I said, proximate cause is composed of certain elements, and the cases say that a crime is not a superseding intervening cause if the crime is foreseeable. Otherwise, if you take that argument to the logical extreme, you could just own an apartment project, put your head in the sand, take off all the security gates, take away, lock off the doors and say, we don't care if people are getting killed, raped, or shot here, because it's a criminal act. So therefore, we're never going to be liable. So what we're doing
is, in the ideal world, you're writing the rules. What type of security under these flags would you have us impose on an apartment complex such as this?
A simple gate.
How would a gate...
Electronic gate to keep people in and out.
Well, he went in a party. How would a gate help?
Well, the murderer didn't, though. The murderer was a hardened criminal, and the police, the affidavit of Joe Garcia shows this person was a life criminal. Would not have been on that property, you know,
said that they were both guests.
I don't think that that's clear in the record. The only thing that's clear in the record is that Andre Lasker was a hardened life criminal that was there and stabbed my client who was attending a party.
He crashed the party?
I don't think it's clear in the record how he got there.
Did he know anybody there?
That's not in the record.
What evidence did you put on the foundation that he was there?
Well, the evidence that we had, Your Honor, was that our client was at the party. There was no evidence.
What evidence did you put on about the murder? How he got there and the causation, the cause of wounds.
How he arrived? We don't know how he arrived. Nobody knew that fact. He was in prison, and nobody knew how he got to the party. There was no witnesses.
Was he at the party?
Yes, and there was no witnesses at the party that we were able to find that knew him.
How did you get the information about it? He was high on alcohol and cocaine.
Well, that's another thing. I don't think that I believe that there was some evidence in the record of that, but I think it was hearsay. I think we objected to it. It was unauthenticated records. Here we've got a security expert making chemical and toxicology decisions. We objected to that. There was all kinds of problems with their summary judgment evidence, which brings me to another point that I want to raise before my time expires, and that is, Your Honors, I believe that we're putting the cart before the horse in this case for this reason, because the summary judgment evidence in this case raised by the defendant in the trial court was totally incompetent. There was no summary judgment evidence. The only evidence that passed any muster was the deposition testimony of Chief Garcia, which was contradicted. The rest of their evidence we objected to. It shouldn't have even been considered by the court. What they filed was basically a general demurrer like you would in federal court to our claim. If you look at their summary judgment evidence.
Thank you. I have one question.
What case do you rely on as the best case supporting your view that under the facts of this case, there is a duty?
Your Honor, I would say the Hawk versus Savoy case is probably the best, and the Midkiff case. If I had to, those are too tough to pick between those two. Because Midkiff was also a summary judgment reversal on a crime.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
May it please the Court, just to respond to a couple points. First of all, the status of the decedent in this case is extremely important. That determines the duty that is owed, if any, by the landowner. Certainly to a tenant, the landowner owes a higher duty. To licensees and trespassers, the duty is much lower.
Does the record clearly show his status then?
Absolutely.
An uninvited guest.
I believe that it shows clearly he's an uninvited guest, but even giving the respondent the benefit of the doubt and that he wasn't invited yet. He's still a licensee. There's absolutely no question at all that he's not an invitee. I mean, he was not the tenant, and under no theory is it alleged that he's an invitee. So the standard is lower. The duty that is owed by the landowner is much lower.
On the summary judgment records we have it as a pleading, really a general pleading for negligence.
That's correct, but under negligence, in order to determine whether there was negligence, you have to look at the factors giving rise to negligence, and one of the factors is duty.
Except for the status of the person injured, there doesn't seem to be much difference between you and the respondent, except that the evidence is not high enough, in your view, to establish foreseeability, and it is in his view.
It's our position that duty is a question of law. Certainly if there are disputed facts,
Like foreseeability.
On foreseeability, it may become, the foreseeability question may become a question of fact.
If this was foreseeable, if it is determined as a matter of fact by whoever should determine that, that this was foreseeable, is there any reason not to have a duty in these circumstances?
Absolutely. There's other factors that go into duty other than foreseeability. Certainly foreseeability is the dominant factor. But as I indicated before, there's other factors that the court considers when determining if in fact there is a duty. For example, the magnitude of the burden that's placed on the defendant, the likelihood of the harm to the plaintiff versus the burden that's placed on the defendant. All of those factors also are considered when determining if in fact there is a duty.
Can that be articulated on this summary judgment record?
I believe under this summary judgment record, yes. There is, I believe as a matter of law, this incident was not foreseeable and therefore there's no duty. But
there have been 20 crimes in the last 6 months.
Depends what the 20 crimes were for. If it was, if it were for very minor crimes, possibly not. But with the record that we have before this court, I think as a matter of law, it is not foreseeable. Certainly if there were other assaults, that would give rise possibly to a duty because of foreseeability. But I believe...
But you argue again, I'm still unclear.
Okay.
You say it would give rise to a duty because of foreseeability, but then you tell me there are other factors that have to be considered.
Right, so, and it may give rise to a duty based upon foreseeability. Like I said, that's one of the factors to be considered. Foreseeability is the dominant factor, but like I said, there are also other factors to be considered. We would ask that this court reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals and affirm the summary judgment final by the top court.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the arguments for the day, and all the arguments are presented on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All right. Oye, oye.